Welcome to the Meyer Conversations podcast. Thanks for joining me. I'm Mick Reinhardt, and I offer you a glimpse behind the game day experience in the Eastern League. If you like what you hear, do me a favor and spread the word. On iTunes, you can subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. You can also now find us on Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn. Our website is meyerconversations.com, and you can catch us on Twitter at MINORCONVSPOD. Now, on to the show. For this episode, I'm joined by Dominic Latkovsky, the founder and man behind Birdzerk and the rotating cast of characters in The Superstars. We discuss making the business a family affair, traveling with the outfits, and getting minor league players to join in on the fun. So sit back and enjoy episode 17 of the Meyer Conversations podcast with my guest, Dominic Latkovsky. So Dominic, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, it's nice to be with you, Mick. Thanks for asking me to be a part of it.
So I want to go back to kind of, you know, your origins and go back all the way to when you started out being the mascot for Louisville Redbirds back in 1990, Billy Bird. You were only 19-year-old in college at the time, and this was an existing character for them, but they kind of gave you a lot of free rein to do what you wanted with the character. How pretty impressive or how important was that for you as a 19-year-old to kind of have that ability to do what you wanted?
Well, it was very cool, actually. I mean, I was just so excited to get the job in the first place. Louisville Redbirds were the first minor league baseball team to draw 1 million fans. It was, you know, big crowds at the games. It was a big stadium where they played, and on fireworks nights or whatever, 10-cent hot dogs or 25-cent hot dog nights or whatever, they'd get 30,000 fans for a minor league baseball game. So there were some huge crowds there. I think they averaged probably more around 8 or 12,000 back in the day, but still that's a lot of fans. So it was fun to be able to get the gig as Billy Bird. And as a 19-year-old, I mean, heck, I was 19. I was in college. I didn't know what the heck I was doing with my life, I guess, to a point. And here, my boss just let me, he saw that I guess I had some talent with being a mascot performer, and my boss, Dale Owens, was always just so, he was always so supportive, and he had my back and talk about this and that and what could we do crazy, and then a lot of it worked and a lot of it didn't, and we'd celebrate the victories and we'd laugh about the failures and like, ooh, yeah, maybe we need to scrap that one or not do that again or change it up. If we do this or we do that, we can make improvements on it. So that was cool back then. And of course, like I said, I was only 19, so I didn't know squat about anything about life. And so I was just trying to learn as I went along, and sure enough, people, I guess, saw that I had some decent skills at it and kept telling me, man, you're just as funny as the San Diego Chicken, or you should try to do what he does and travel around and do your show. So that's where we went with it.
And you also made it a family affair. You roped your brothers into this whole deal as well.
Well, yeah, that's right. And it's even kind of bigger than that. My two brothers, one older, one younger, they were assisting me with a lot of the routines that we were doing at the games at the time. So on the big nights, I would get my brothers to help out and dress up as umpires or grounds crew or baseball players, visiting home team, whatever, and get them out there. And we would do dance routines or silly gags or shenanigans and whatever, just to help make the show that much better. And again, some stuff was great and worked well, and some stuff didn't. And then it was our father, Andy, who he was the one who really was very supportive of he was the creative guy, and he would say, hey, why don't you guys do this? And he would come up with ideas. He was a baseball softball umpire, so he had a softball uniform. He said, why don't you have Brennan or Lex, one of my brothers, wear the my outfit, and then ask the real umpires at the end of the inning, just one of them to move out behind second base, and you slide out by third, nobody will know the difference, and then Billy Bird shows up and starts bothering you, and next thing you know, you guys are busting into a funky dance routine. So we did that and tore the house down, and everybody went crazy and loved it and applauded, and that was our big, one of our big routines, and then Dad came up with some others as well. And then my older sister, just to branch it out a little bit more, she had dated a guy who was the mascot for the local minor league basketball team. And so I was always tagging along with him back when I was 14, 15 years old. And that was where my whole mascot love for the mascot life and just going to the games and putting on a show and making people laugh, where that all began.
You are, you know, family entertainment in the best sense of the term. You already mentioned San Diego Chicken, but you also bring up one of my favorites, things that I've heard. You know, one of my favorites growing up was Max Paxton. You know, it absolutely, you know, just that kind of personality and that kind of entertainment on the field. And I think that's fantastic that you kind of carry that tradition on.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing. And I tell people this all the time. So when the Louisville Redbirds came to town in 1982, Louisville was hungry for baseball. And so the community really supported it. As I mentioned earlier, we were the very first minor league team to have 1 million fans during a season. So I was at just about, I think, every single game. I was out there with my dad, with my brothers, with my friends. We were down there. We were asking for autographs, asking for balls, broken bats, the scorecards at the end of the night, trying to meet the players, talk to the players, the visiting players. But the things that I remember the most, I don't remember the score of the game and how many hits Vince Coleman or Willie McGee or how many strikeouts Joe McGrane or any of the big pitchers that came through at the time, how they might have done. But I remember vividly Max Paxton being there and sitting there in the stands watching him coach first base, doing his antics and spitting up that steamy spit stuff however he would do what he did, and just acting a cornball, and everybody laughing so much at him, you know, could care less about the game at that moment. They're just watching him do his thing. And I thought that was just the neatest thing. Same thing when Morgana, the kissing bandit, would run across the field and she would call timeout. You know, I remember seeing her there at the game. Captain Dynamite came to the games and would blow himself up behind second base. And I can still picture that to this day. Of course, the Chicken was there, the Philly Fanatic a couple of years later, 80s. So there were so many different traveling acts that came through there. And I just remember thinking, man, that would be a really fun way to make a living. Just going from city to city to city, doing a show at a different ballpark every night. You're at a baseball game, for God's sake, and you're making people laugh and you're getting paid and you travel, and like, what could be better than that? I think that's where all my wheels started spinning and got the wheels in motion on making it work. And sure enough, you know, here we are in 2018, and that's what I've done with my life.
Going back to your time as Billy Bird, one of the big moments for you was in 1991, they hosted the AAA All-Star Game there. So you got to, you know, be a performer in front of a lot of big executives at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was key. When I look back and just you think about things in your life that shape your life or that where you don't realize it at the time how important something might be. And that event was humongous. And I didn't remember, you know, I didn't realize it. I just, we're having the AAA All-Star Game. Okay, I mean, I knew it was kind of a big deal. But I didn't realize every single AAA team from Edmonton and Calgary and Norfolk and Pawtucket and, you know, Albuquerque and all, you know, all across the country, whatever, 28, 30 of them, whatever, how many major league teams there were at the time, that all of those team owners and general managers, executives would be on hand at the games because they had some some meetings that went hand in hand at the time, you know, the day before, the day of, the day after. So they were all at the game. And so I just remember my boss telling me, hey, make sure you put on a good show for the All-Star game. Do some of your best bits and stuff. So we were like, oh, okay. Because it was on TV as well. It was on some cable TV, USA Network or something. So that was a cool opportunity to be on national TV. We did our show, and, you know, like I said, we pulled out all the stops and did all the best stuff that we had at the time. And then the next year, another just stroke of luck, Louisville hosted the baseball winter meetings in December of 92. So right here in our own backyard, and I had just finished college in the summer of 92, and I still wanted to pursue this, and my boss and some of the people in my office at the Louisville Redbirds said, if you're going to make a career of this, and you're serious about this, you need to get a booth at the winter meeting and showcase, you know, get a booth, tell people what you do, show your video, talk to people, and go out there and tell people you want to do your shows for them. And so that, you know, being entrepreneurial, I spent my money and got a booth and produced a video and got marketing materials and all kinds of stuff. Spent, I think it was $6,000 all told back then when it was all said and done. You know, I had to come up with $6,000 of my own money to do all that.
And where did that come from?
Where did the money? Do you know?
Yes, I do know. That's why I asked.
Okay, so also when I was 14, I started scalping tickets for sporting events and concerts because I realized if I stood out in front of the University of Louisville basketball games and held my fingers up in the air, people would be walking in with maybe an extra ticket or two, and they'd see me, 14-year-old kid, stand out there, and they'd walk up and either give me the ticket or they would sell it to me as maybe it was a $20 ticket. They'd sell it to me for $5, and those people would then go in the game, and then couple of seconds later, I could hold those tickets up in the air and sell them for face value, sell them for $20 or whatever. So they, you know, I'm a 14-year-old kid and I can stand out there for an hour in front of a basketball game and make $100 or $200. And I was like, whoa, it's pretty good money. And do it for concerts and Prince and Tina Turner and all kinds of crazy concerts back in the day. I remember doing that. So I made money doing that as well. My money, actually, that summer, I made a lot of money scalping Garth Brooks tickets because he was hot. I was able to buy a bunch of them, stood in line, got a bunch of them. My friends helped me buy a bunch of them, and then I scalped them. I had to go across the bridge into Indiana to scalp them because in Kentucky, you couldn't sell them for more than face value or else you might get in trouble or get arrested or whatever. So anyway, I made a lot of money on Garth Brooks tickets, and I used that money and turned that into my investment in my future Billy Bird and Company.
So
thank you, Garth Brooks. Thank you, Garth Brooks, if you're out there listening. I appreciate it.
So then at this winter league, at the winter meetings, you expected to get a couple, you know, side gigs, I'll say, besides being Billy Bird, and it turned out to be more than just a couple.
That's right. So I was hoping with $6,000, I was like, okay, well, the Chicken at the time was charging $7,500 or $8,500 per show, you know, per night to do what he did. And he was worth it because fans would come to the games and sponsors would want to sponsor the night. My boss explained it to me. He's like, hey, when the Chicken comes, he charges me $8,000. He said, I'll get UPS or Kentucky Fried Chicken to sponsor it for $12,000. And they, you know, then they have a big night. They bring a lot of their company employees to the game. UPS or Kentucky Fried Chicken is happy because there's a huge crowd and all night long they hear, hey, fans, it's the Famous Chicken brought to you by UPS or Kentucky Fried Chicken. And so then all their employees would be at the game and they'd have a great time because the Chicken put on a great show. And of course the Redbirds are happy because bunch of people were at the game. The Chicken's happy because he made a lot of money, and that's kind of how it worked. So we set out in that winter meetings and said, if we can get four teams to pay us $1,500 for a show, I'll at least make my money back. And then I'll, you know, I'll, then I won't be in the hole because I had invested $6,000 in the show, in the whole production, the whole business to begin. And that first year, we ended up doing 48 shows. And when the winter meetings booth opened, the trade show opened, and here comes all the teams walking up and down the aisles, we start talking to them. And, I mean, we're booking shows in Asheville, North Carolina, Medicine Hat, Canada. Here comes the Mexican League teams. And luckily, my younger brother, Brennan, was pretty good at, and actually my older brother was too. They're really good with Spanish. And so my brother could carry on. He was only 19 at the time, 20. He could carry on a conversation with the Mexican League executives that were walking by, and they liked what they saw in the video. So we're getting bookings in Monterrey, Mexico, and Monclova, Mexico, and as long I could book all those shows as long as I was back home for all the Louisville Redbirds home games. That was the deal. I could use the Billy Bird character and do as many shows as I could when the Redbirds were on the road, and then I had to be back for the Redbirds home game. So that was the arrangement at first. That's how it worked out.
But eventually saw that this was a huge potential for you and kind of wanted, I don't want to say wanted their piece, but, you know, this is a character they had. This was their costume. So yep. So you had to kind of come up with your own to kind of break away from that.
That's right. And so they said, okay, the first year you can just use Billy Bird. And then after they saw the first year, we did 48 shows, they're like, okay, yeah, they're on to something. So they wanted me to sign this big contract, and it was going to pay the Redbirds a lot of the money and that we were going to make. And then we thought about it and figured out that, you know, being the Redbirds mascot, Billy Bird, it didn't really work in our favor because a lot of the AAA teams were apprehensive about hiring Billy Bird because why would the Iowa Cubs need to hire the Louisville Redbirds mascot Billy Bird to come put on a show at one of their games when they were playing the New Orleans Zephyrs or whatever? So we decided at the time, you know what, it's best if we just break away from the Redbirds. Let's get our own bird character, get our own bird costume that's somewhat similar but different, and just make a clean break and do our own thing. And that's what we did, and that's when Bird Zirk was born, 1995. And so Bird Zirk was born. We took a step back from you know, changing the name from Billy Bird to Bird Zirk, changed the costume, bought our own costume, and the Redbirds, they hired a new guy to do Billy Bird, and we pretty much made just a clean breakaway from them. Wasn't a horrible breakup at all. They understood, and everything was good, and actually performing tonight for the Louisville Bats, some of the same people working there, carrying us to this day. We're doing Superstars there tonight.
So you brought up Superstars just there. So 3 years after Bird Zirk, 1995, so then in 1998, you come up with this idea for Superstars, which are these inflatable characters. The first idea, going back to your family, was thought up by who again?
The first was Dad. I'd say it was Dad. Dad was the first one with the dancing umpire routine.
But then even on the Superstars, the first character that really he was pressing for.
Oh yeah,
and has become a staple of the show is Harry Canary.
Harry Canary. So Dad. Once we started doing Bird Zirk, we had Bird Zirk going for a few years, and we're you know, maintaining that success and getting the Bird Zirk name out there to everybody, and everybody knew the Bird Zirk show was a good show. And Dad kept suggesting we get rid of Bird Zirk and instead replacing with the character and call him Harry Canary. And around that same time, we had a friend who was doing a character here locally, which was the All Sport bottle, and it was an inflatable costume. And we also found out that the University of Nebraska had an inflatable mascot character. So we started learning about these inflatable characters. What we did, we ended up making Harry Canary an inflatable bird, and we teamed him up with Ken Giraffe Jr., Cal Ripken, Clammy Sosa, and Pee Wee Geese. And we made a group of five characters, inflatable characters that were going to, you know, be their own act and travel around and do performances. The problem was we didn't have a name for them. We didn't know what we were going to call them. So we batted that around. It was going to be the Baseball Buddies or the Baseball Crew or whatever. And then somehow we came up with Superstars, and it clicked, and everybody loved the name, and we ran with it, and we launched the Superstars in 98. Same kind of deal. We invested like $30,000 at the time in all the costumes and all the stuff. So we knew the price tag could be higher, and I think we were charging around $3,500. So we were hoping we could get around 10 shows. And I think that first year we got 28 or something, and now we do hundreds of more than 100 a year with the Superstar show.
You touched on it a little bit, but I'm interested in, you know, kind of the maintenance of the costumes, I'll say, or the cost, and you don't have to, you know, tell me the exact cost, but ballpark it to some extent. Like how much do the Superstars costumes kind of run you? Because with the, you know, the inflatable aspect of it, I would think that these are pretty expensive and pretty touchy costumes to be traveling all over the country with.
They are, yes, they're not cheap. I mean, they run us $5,000 or $6,000 per costume, and now we have 45 to 50 of them, I believe. So, you know, we've made a big investment in these inflatable costumes that we get made, and we have them made specifically for what we want. We want, you know, when we get Mike Rainbow Trout made, and we want him made a certain way and to look a certain way, you know, the company that makes them will do that for us. When we get Ken Giraffe made, we put a little mustache on him, put his hat on backwards, have an earring, you know, try to give him some features of Ken Griffey Jr. And so the company will make them as we want them, and they're detailed, and they're pricey, and we've got to take care of them, of course, and clean them and air them out and repair them, and yeah, we travel with them and go all over the place with them. So we'll mix them up and take 5 or 6 to a show, and if teams request certain characters, we'll take those certain characters to the games, and it's fun. It's been a fun job. It's hard to believe I've been doing this stuff for 28 years and still love doing it. And my body, I can feel it. I'm not a 20-year-old soccer college athlete anymore. My body's breaking down, and my knees hurt, and my body aches, my back hurts, my elbow. I mean, I'm not getting any younger, but it's still a blast to do it, and I don't see me putting an end to it anytime soon.
Do you guys sit around and brainstorm after the season and come up with new characters or even new routines to kind of freshen the job up a little bit?
We try to, yeah. Of course, the characters, we come up with the characters quite often, and there are a lot of people who submit, you know, we got regular people who are always sending us ideas for characters, and so when, you know, we have our list, you know, our hot list of who might be the next character, pull the trigger, and we do it when we feel it's time to add one. So that's how we do the characters, and then the coming up with the routines, of course, that's our bread and butter, are the routines. It's difficult to come up with stuff. It really is. And so people who have maybe seen us a lot might say, well, they do the same thing every time. Well, we don't do the same thing every time. We do a lot of similar stuff. We just try to mix it up the best we can with different music, different dances, different change up this or that, or instead of eating the bat boy, we eat, you know, ambush the umpire and spit him out with torn up umpire clothes. So we try to mix it up in small ways. And of course it's tough to come up with good material. And that's one of our challenges. And I guess we've done well enough at it where we're still in business 28 years later, and people still love us. And I just arrived here in Louisville on a red-eye flight from California, where we did a show near Sacramento last night, and And then the lady from the game texted me and just said, thanks, you guys are awesome. Everybody loved it and you're amazing. And, you know, and it's just great to hear that and to know that everybody, you know, still loves what we do and still appreciates it. And I think what it all boils down to is people go to a game to have fun. You know, they're at some sporting event to have a good time and to enjoy themselves. And our show resonates with kids, with adults, with old people, you know, male, female, it doesn't matter. It's comedy. It's slapstick. It's fun. The names are clever. You know, the kids at a ball game might not know who the heck Pee Wee Geese or Harry Canary is supposed to be, but all they know is it's a couple of funny birds out there doing funny stuff, falling down, and they can enjoy it just as much as their parents or grandparents do.
Yeah, that I would wholeheartedly agree with that. I'll get you out of here on this. You get a lot of players and coaches and even umpires to kind of join you in some routines. How easy is that, and how do you get them to actually do it willingly and do it, you know, with a smile on their face?
Well, that's just part of the job, and I think I've figured out how to approach the players and the coaches to try to rope them into helping. And I'll tell you, I mean, it's like life. Most people, most ball players and umpires and coaches are just nice people, just like in the world. You're going to 80% of the people, 90% of the people are going to be nice people. And then you got your jerks or your people who might be in a bad mood or like just, you know, and luckily that doesn't happen very often. Most of the time, players and coaches and umpires are cool and nice and friendly and willing to help out whatever they can, you know, they might not necessarily want to get out there and make a fool of themselves or dance with us or do anything crazy, but a lot of times they do. A lot of times they do want to have fun and they don't mind, you know, making the game that much more fun for the fans. So we've had a lot of, and even to this day, what I'll do when I go to try to talk a third baseman into doing my bird zerk routine with me, I'll tell him, say, hey, I don't know who you are right now. It's nice to meet you. But, you know, I've been doing this routine for 25, 26 years. And when I've done it with a bunch of people that I didn't know who they were when I met them, they were in the minor leagues and they weren't a big name to me, but they ended up being big names. And I'll name off, of course, Cal Ripken. When he did the routine, he was already a big name, but Scott Rowland and Evan Longoria and Miguel Cabrera and Kevin Youkilis and Freddie Freeman and D. Gordon and Chris Bryant, all these guys that have done routines with me who, when I met them, they weren't, you know, I didn't know them from Adam or, you know, they were just a stranger to me, but they end up going and being big time Major League Baseball players. So I tell them all those guys did it. And hopefully one day I can add your name to that list is what I tell them. And usually they're fine with going along with it. And they go, oh man, I don't want to dance. I'm not very good. I'm like, you don't have to be a good dancer. Just have fun with it. Go along with it. You don't have to be a great dancer or whatever. Just have some fun with me. So usually it works out. Sometimes they're like, no, I don't want to do it. Can we get somebody else? And then I'll go and ask the shortstop or second baseman or somebody else. We always figure out something.
Yeah. So I appreciate your time, Dominic. Thank you very much. And keep entertaining.
Yes. It's been fun, Mick. I appreciate you asking me to be a part of your podcast here. Thank you very much, and nice talking with you. And let me know if you'd love to do it again. I'll be glad to join you again.
Sounds great. Thanks.
We'll see you soon. Thank you, Mick. Take care. All right, bye-bye.
And that wraps up episode 17 of the Meyer Conversations podcast. Stay on the lookout for Bird Zerk and the Superstars coming to a town near you. Until next time, see you at the ballpark.